Donaldson on alto sax with Blues Walk. It was a titled track of his 1958 album. That's right, all the way back then. The name of the album was Callin' All Cats. Callin', not calling, but Callin' All Cats. Lou Donaldson died in 2012 at the age of 66. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. And what do you know? There's a lot of activity in Washington. I mean, if you wanted to write a play about crazy people who are in charge of a country, people would say, come on, that's nobody would relate to that. It couldn't be true. But hello, hello, hello. It is, however, the first day of the 116th Congress, which opened today with a Democratic majority in the House and longtime party leader Nancy Pelosi, congresswoman from California, in the coveted spot as Speaker of the House. Oh, this has been something she has wanted for a long, long time. And, she's got it. She's got the plum position. But, you know, the interesting thing is that one of the first things that Pelosi and her team did was short-circuit progressive members in Congress who had an idea that this would be the time to push through some changes, some procedural and legislative changes that would benefit the people, like health care and so forth. Well, that got shot to hell. And it's a sad note, I think, but it just tells you what politics is all about. Politics is all about what's in it for me. If there's nothing in it for me, then there's no need for me to get all excited about it. But still, it is significant. It is the 116th Congress, as I said. And that immediately serves notice on President Trump and on the Republican Party and on the people in general that it's a new day. What it will bring, we don't know. But we know it's going to be a lot of fighting, a lot more fighting. And you don't get the sense that the Democrats have taken care or taken the time to be very careful about how they project themselves. Because on this first day of the 116th Congress, they indicate that They're still unruly. They're fighting among themselves. And they're not a solid group. They come across as being undisciplined. And they come across as being in disarray. You can't have this in politics. How often must people tell them this? It is bad enough that Trump is in disarray. And that could be to the Democrats' advantage. His White House is totally chaotic. We know that. And in disarray. And we have people coming and going quickly without really understanding what this administration is about. Trump has no set policy. It changes from minute to minute, day to day. And it's off the rails. It doesn't bear any resemblance to a cogent plan at all. You don't get that sense at all. The Republicans, by extension, are also in a state of disarray. A couple of them are getting old, they're aging out, and new ambitious people are looking to take their places. But what exactly is this administration about? Well, what is going on here? The Democrats have been in disarray themselves, although, Trump actually gave them a gift, the gift of chaos. And in the gift of chaos, the Democrats, if they worked a little bit to convey that they are the grown people in Congress, that they have a plan, they have cogent ideas, and that they have strategies that people can trust and put their faith in, well, they're operating as if they got that covered. I hate to break it to them, but they don't. This is a weird time in which people have great distrust and disdain for both parties, and with good reason. So we have a group, a small group of progressive folks. They just got in, and they brought with them the zeal, the optimism of newbies. They worked like hell at the grassroots level to get themselves elected, and with spit and chewing gum budgets, they were successful. In the case, for example, of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of the Bronx, she toppled a 10-term congressman who had no idea that he was not invincible. She didn't have a grand budget. She didn't have, a lot of resources, but she put her nose to the grindstone. She got elected. And now coming into Congress as a new voice, the first thing she and others encounter is a truculent Democratic Party that doesn't really have great respect for progressives and a progressive agenda. This is so unfortunate. And it is all the more unfortunate because the speaker, the now elected Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, experienced as she is in matters of legislative action and so forth, you think she would say, okay, I'm glad that you brought these ideas, and let's see how we can strategize to get them enacted. Nope. First order of business is to shoot them down. And in a sense now, the progressives, this is just a small cluster of them, have to start from scratch and have to fight the Democratic Party for things that the party should be thrilled to adopt and to champion. Things like, apart from the usual stuff of sponsoring laws and enacting bills about equal opportunity and all of that stuff, but they were coming in with, in the case of Cortez, a green agenda, being specific about it, being specific about a wage, a living wage, being specific about what the Democratic Party should be championing in other areas as well, about schools and about revisiting standards that no longer seem to exist. So isn't it ironic? Here we are. We have a president who's out of control. His administration is out of control. His policies are out of control. And now we have the so-called opposition party acting exactly like the president and his party. And the people, again, are shortchanged. Here is an opportunity. Why not explore it and make it a serious part of your agenda? What is it with Nancy Pelosi and her so-called team? What is this new policy that the Democratic Party is now championing that it finds it unattractive to push hard for long overdue measures that the people want? I think there's a little bit of, how should I say? I think Pelosi has some jealousy here. As an older woman who has had to, she had to, she had to work very hard within the ranks of the Democratic Party to achieve some kind of distinction, and it's now paid off. She got the big prize, but it took a long time. Here comes a young woman in the prime of her life. She's not even 30 years old. She has done a miraculous thing in the way she conducted her campaign. She just swiped this guy off the face of the planet. Nobody even talks about him anymore. And she is not being meek and mild. She went at this thing with a fervor of being of service to the community, and not just to the Bronx community where she lived and where she had her, which was her home base, but all the people of the country. She has a different vision, and others like her, not a lot, there aren't many of them, but they're a new breed. And I think it is intimidating, or at least that's the message that is being telecast. Here's an older woman who should have been very, very enthusiastic about this new generation of leadership, the potential of that to really restore the party and to restore the people's faith in this party. And instead, we have politics as usual because they advanced certain things. Well, of course, they have to be shot down and to start all over again. And then when Nancy Pelosi feels comfortable and secure, then she might consider their proposals. This is just so asinine. And this is why, you know, sometimes you say in politics, you see people, they give you a great prize. This comes to the party at no expense. You know, this level of enthusiasm, this level of participation, and the promise. Instead, you have the old guard running things. So we will have to be prepared that there'll be a lot of infighting. And I think, because I just don't see any evidence of anything otherwise, I think it's just sheer jealousy and resentment that you have new blood, oxygenated blood at that. And they aim to get things done. And they have the energy to do it. And this is very off-putting to stuck-in-the-mud leadership that for years, for decades, had no answers, went along and to get along. And I'm saying to you, we need to watch that dynamic because it is going to affect the operations of the Democratic Party because Nancy Pelosi is in charge, and that means a lot of things that are not being said. Most of all, it means it's the old guard versus the new blood. And it doesn't have to be that way. Nancy Pelosi and other old guard Democrats should be thrilled that there's this new generation of Democrats or Democratic sympathetic, Democrat sympathetic elected officials who would want to lend their energy to a conjoined effort to advance the cause of the people. But look, there it is right in front of us today. Well, of course, the you know, the big news is the flip side of the coin, the PR, the coverage, press releases that are flying out the window about Nancy Pelosi, and she's queen. I have no problem with people being queen. You know, you want to be queen, go ahead and be your queenie self. But this is a very desperate time, and we need leadership with insight and foresight. And when the first thing that this incoming leader does, she and her, quote, team, unquote, is to stymie progress and stymie progressivism, well, you know, what do we do? What do we do? Well, so that is on the table. What are we going to expect? It's the same old, same old. And, you know, here is, oh, this is the other thing. And it has to do with just using your brain a bit. Although there have been comments that Nancy Pelosi seems to be losing her brain a bit. You're just coming into the 116th Congress. It just started up today. And already we're hearing things like, discussions from Pelosi about indictments, the possibility of indictments, the possibility of going after Trump to prosecute him, to impeach him, that kind of thing. which is tacky and tasteless, but also says you don't have basic common sense. You don't say these things. Everybody knows that the Democrats are going to find a way or going to work hard to see whether they could impeach the president or to see whether he's indictable based on the investigations that are in play still. But you don't come in. And the first thing that you do is that you start acting like him. You have these options available to you. He knows it. Everybody in Congress knows it. Everybody in the country knows it. But you don't come in talking this kind of tacky talk. And you shouldn't open your mouth and start saying these things unless you have everything in order, ready to go. But you come in and you start acting like a bully. You start acting like a thug. That is not supposed to be the way you behave. I mean, you have to have a sense of decorum. Everybody knows that there's a possibility that the Democrats will vigorously pursue indictment of Trump, vigorously pursue possible impeachment. Everybody knows that. Why do you have to come in talking this crap? I mean, why do you have to say that? Are you so weak? Are you so yearning for recognition that you start behaving just like Trump? Have some grace. Have some tact. And start talking about other things that advance the cause of getting people what they need, of protecting the interests of the people. And you stop talking all this saber-rattling stuff. Leave that alone. Inevitably, it will, surface. But this is your first day, for crying out loud. And already they're acting like a bunch of people who can't wait to have a bloody war. That's how immature they are. If you have the power, you have the power. You don't have to tell the world, look, you know, we have the power. You have the power. If you have the power, all you have to do is shut up and organize. Just shut up. And concentrate on advancing the causes that are at the top of the list. Work on that with everybody knowing that you have the power to do A, B, C, D, and E. See, they're all behaving. There's this, I don't know what you call it, but it seems as if the entire country has enmeshed itself in modes of behavior that are so tacky, so base, so common. There's no sense of sophistication at all. And they don't mind, you know, doing this and the public knowing. But it is such a tacky, tacky way to operate. Speaking of tacky, that brings me to Donald Trump and his $5 billion wall with Mexico. He is not stopping. He is relentless in pursuit of getting his $5 billion come hell or high water. And he's going to put up that wall. And he would have achieved the great objective of his political career, his presidential term. Well, of course, there are reasons for him being so relentless. And we'll talk a bit about that. After this break, we'll take this break and come back to your calls, and we'll talk about your observations at 888-874-4888. Why is this wall so absolutely important to Donald Trump? And he seems now to be backtracking a little bit. He's trying to be amenable. He wants to have conversations. Let's talk anything as long as I get my wall. Why is that wall so important? Right after this at 888-874-4888. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about Trump and his relentless pursuit of the wall. It is driving him absolutely bonkers. And we kind of have some ideas as to why this is so important. So I'm looking to you for some possible explanations as to why this wall at this time, under these conditions, why this wall, in Trump's eyes, must be built in this singular focus on this wall. 888-874-4888, and we start with Gwen from New York. Hi, Gwen, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice. Oh, Eutrice, you said so much between yesterday and today. And I couldn't get on yesterday, and I wanted to react to some of the other things you were saying. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. First, I wanted to tell you that up close and personal, I'm receiving my own dose of the Democratic Party right now. I'm running for public advocate, and I've been invited to zero forums, and I've had to fight my way to get onto every single forum, and all kinds of strange things are happening. And it's really a shame because the one thing that is really interesting, even though there's so many people running, it feels like democracy, more like democracy when I see a lot of people running than when I see a couple of people that are somebody's favorites. And so on the upside, that's really great. On the downside is I'm so disappointed. And I hear you, and I've heard Gary Null. I hear everybody talk, and I know what to expect. But really, this is the first time anything like this has ever happened to me, because I've run for office before, and I've always been invited to the debates, the forums. These are just natural things. When you put your name on the list and you're properly registered, you get invited to things, except for this time. Not this time. Not for me. And it's been very, very disturbing. And it's more disturbing because of the mechanism behind this. Not just that I can't be there or I have to go through jumping all kinds of hoops, but the idea that a person wants to run, we are all allowed to run for public office in this country. It's our right. It's even your obligation. And to say to one candidate, listen, we've decided behind the scenes, we've made our choice. You're not our choice, and we're going to do everything we possibly can, because it hasn't just been the forum things. It's been all kinds of other things that are happening that are really, really strange, and it's scary. And that leads me to the next place. I happened to see the movie Vice the other night. I'm pretty sure Gary Null must have seen it, because he's been talking about not the movie specifically, but Dick Cheney for the last 2 days, and quite accurately. And what I want to say is that I was a part of the anti-war movement. I was, you know, fought the Bush administration, all that. And I knew about Dick Cheney, but the way that the movie has put it together, and it is a docudrama, so it is based on fact. And it was so disturbing that this one man, this thug, Dick Cheney, was able to get us so, so, so close with his lawyers to having losing our democracy. And they were purposely working for this. And then listening to all the thievery that went on. So I want to say that Donald Trump is a buffoon in office. But it was much, much scarier to me watching somebody like Dick Cheney, who is a stealth bomber, a mad, psychopathic stealth bomber that was basically doing whatever he wanted to the people of this country, stealing as much money as they could possibly steal, coming up with these lawyers that were trying to get rid of the democracy itself. And so we allowed all that to go on. And then we went to the next president, and we never really addressed it. And now we're up to this guy. And the thing is that this guy has the power that he has because of many of the laws that were changed under that administration and continued on through the Obama administration. And so what we have now is a government that, you know, I think we all know this, but, you know, hearing it in the movie the other night just underlined it when they said the United States government has the right to listen to any telephone call, to any computer, anything. You have no privacy whatsoever in this country. And the thing is, they're not just listening. They're fooling around with it, too. If you get in their way, they're messing around with your stuff. And it gets to be very scary and very intimidating. And it's really a shame. I guess that leads me over to Ocasio-Cortez and saying that I thought it was a fabulous idea and so exciting when she talked about the Green New Deal. And I did not support Nancy Pelosi taking another term. And I think that it's just such a shame that here we go again with the same old crap forever and ever. And, you know, one of the reasons why I run is because I'm sick of waiting. I'm sick of waiting till these people decide to do something. And people ask you why you're running. Well, because I can't wait any longer. The planet is a mess. It's in peril. And all we do is sit around and wait for them to do one little tiny thing. And this young woman was so threatening that it was the first thing on the agenda. It wasn't the most important thing on the agenda, but it was the first thing on the agenda just to knock it out of the park and make sure that anything was positive absolutely cannot happen and don't even think about it. Instead, we have some ridiculous thing about paying down the national debt. Are you kidding me? It's just not important. The most important thing that's going on right now is global warming. And, you know, I just want to say that I was just really upset and despondent about how that worked out and why. And it's like I told my mom, and I just said to her, it's not, you know, I don't have anything against her age. I really don't. Bernie Sanders is the same age, and I like Bernie Sanders. But, you know, it's just this, there's a mindset that hasn't changed. You know, it's not 1973 anymore, and we have to move on to more urgent issues. So that was very disappointing. And as far as Trump, I just want to say, leave it on this. It's really the weirdest thing that whoever thought in a million years it would be Trump that was going to bring home troops. Like, are you kidding me? And if it wasn't him that was doing it, I think that people would be really, really thrilled to know that we were going to pull out of Syria and we're going to pull out of Afghanistan, except for, yeah, I heard yesterday that might not be the case. But he did say it and he announced it. And I knew the motive for him doing it was just to change the subject so we'd stop talking about, you know, impeaching him. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, he is doing it. And no Democrat had the balls to do it. He is doing it, and he's a horrible piece of crap man. And he's not doing it for the right reasons, so we can't be excited about him having a conscience because he has none. All he wants to do is to have us not focus on him and his legal stuff. But it is interesting to me watching this that he's able to do that. And I am also glad that we're not going to go to war with North Korea. And I get very, very upset when I start to hear the Democrats who proclaim to be the progressives talking about going to war with Russia, going to war with all these places. I mean, it seems like nobody understands that the next time we have a war, it's going to be the last war we have. We're just armed to the teeth. We can't do it anymore. And so it's like surreal watching TV these days, surreal watching the Democrats, surreal watching the Republicans, and very, very strange to have, you know, a government that is so intrusive and that has made choices for everybody behind the scenes. It is amazing that Cortez was able to break out and knock down that guy that she did. especially with the shoestring budget. And that's what gives, you know, when she did it, I felt like, you know, I felt inspired all over again. I know that people always say when I'm, you know, doing my campaigns that it is amazing what we're able to do with such a small amount of money. It's not a comfortable thing to have no money. It's a horrible thing. But you got to do what you got to do. And as long as you got foot power and people, you just have to keep pushing through. But it was very inspiring to me. And I hope that she won't give up. I hope that she'll go back and realize that, you know, it's a club, and that's the other thing that's so disturbing. It's a club. And one of the things, I was speaking to a very high up member of the Democratic Party yesterday that was reading me the riot act that just went after me every single which way you could, telling me that I was never an activist, telling all kinds of things. I don't even think she read one thing about me, but it was very, very uninspiring to listen to this crap. And what she didn't understand is that there's lots of Democratic clubs and lots of clubs all over the place. And then there's us, the people out here, right? We're the people that are paying the taxes. We're the people that are living these day-to-day hard lives. I live in East Harlem. Life in East Harlem ain't easy. It's tough. It's very tough on a lot of the people who live here. And so, you know, we don't have time to get involved with all that other crap, because a lot of times people are just trying to make it through, just trying to make it through the next day. And often we're the victims of all the other crap that gets pushed through the government. You know, when they wanted to reopen the East Harlem bus depot, and we have the highest rate of asthma in the United States, you know, this woman asked me, why did I sue them? Why did I sue the MTA? Well, I sued them because I knew there was no other way of handling this, because no one else was going to come to our rescue. It just wasn't going to happen, because stuff like that happens here all the time. And so I just wanted to tell you that I feel the pain of the frustration of the Democratic Party. I think after this, I'll probably throw my towel in too. I don't know if I can go on any longer with this kind of stuff. I get tired of hearing all the people that are now calling themselves progressives. They're not progressive. It's a very centrist party. It's very much about Hillary Clinton and those points of view. And that's not the Democratic Party that I want to be a member of. What I had in mind, or what I've always had in mind, is the Roosevelt. So I'll leave it there. I know it's a lot, but
Thanks
going.
Thanks for getting us started today, Gwen. Thank you so much. And
thank you.
We should follow up on this conversation. Thanks so much. Jeff, from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, people. Hope everyone is doing fine. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, I am hearing you.
All right. Well, we're going to touch on a couple of things. The first of which is Donald Trump and, you know, troops from Syria. And indeed, I believe that last call that went was absolutely right. It's a distraction. But God works in mysterious ways, and it's exactly what we needed to have. We need to be out of Syria, and we need to be out of Afghanistan. So we'll leave that alone. He's still that monkey out front, but then there's that machine that's still running behind it. And what we have to do is shift our paradigm. Democratic Party is not liberal or progressive. The real Democratic Party, Nancy Pelosi and the rest of them that are left there, are not liberal and progressive. We have to name liberal and progressive by their actions, not by what they say they're going to do, or not just by the fact that they're in the Democratic Party. Nancy Pelosi is part of that also. She did not resist Trump on anything. She did not resist a lot of things that went on that were against removing our civil rights, that were war, and that would have helped the country. She's not even moving on global warming. So we know where her money comes from. And you have to look at it like that. It's not a matter of, to me, I think it's wrong. I think it's a matter of jealousy of Ms. Ocasio coming in and garnishing all this publicity and stuff. But it's more like she is protecting her own interest, and that is that she is, listen, when Hillary and Bill came in, that was the shift that moved the Democratic Party, the liberals, into the conservative, leaving liberals behind. It's the reason why we know, listen, we knew it from the start that progressives coming in were going to meet resistance, otherwise Bernie would be president. The Democratic Party is not interested in change right now. They are too much like or a part of the Republican Party, which is the party of industry and, you know, special interests. So we have to shift ourselves. There's going to be, and I would say that it is, you know, yes, Trump chaos is a blessing. I said it before, it's a blessing, an opportunity for the Democrats to truly organize themselves. But the other thing that has to come, it's got to be some fighting. There has to be some disorganization. It's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing when the progressives are fighting the regular Democrats. It's not a bad thing because now we're seeing the choices and who sits on what side of the fence. And now who can we get rid of in the 2020 election? Right?
Oh, that's an interesting point of view.
Right?
That's an interesting point of view. Thank you for calling and for offering your considered opinion today. Ali from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Idris. How you doing?
Hi. How have you been? I haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't have time to listen to the show, but I did listen to it yesterday, which I was very good. And I just wanted to say Happy New Year to you and the PRN audience.
Thank you.
And I hope that it's a better year. Yeah, I couldn't list, you know, kind of holidays and all these other things, but here I am again. And I wanted to make a comment about yesterday that you were talking about the Women's March. And I also would like to ask you a question about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, because
sure.
To me, I'm going to ask you the question after I make the comment on the Women's March. You see, I march on that Women's March in New York City, and I will tell you this, I will never do it again. I will never do it again for various reasons, and I'm just going to just say this one to you and the audience. One is, yes, the majority of the women, I would say 85%, they were white women. But that is not the reason that I will never do it again. I will never do it again because, first of all, the way that marches, protests have been conducted in the city is that the police department has the upper hand. And when I finished that march and I saw this white woman on the side of the police, the woman that organized the march, I said, this is not for me. The biggest enemy of people of color are the police department around this nation. These are the same women that when we march about our issue, which is police brutality, they go and tell the cops in front of us to disrespect us, thank you for serving us. Yes, they are serving them the right way, but they're never serving people of color the right way. I couldn't swallow when I saw these ladies behind those barricades with the microphone giving us directions how to get out and laughing and carry on with the police department, with all these policemen. That is one of the reasons that I will never march again on those marches. And the gentleman who called yesterday who actually said that we really don't do anything and we don't risk anything marching and protesting. I agree with him. But you know what? Sometimes I go there just to vent. It's like a therapy. It's about venting more than anything else. And you have to do it sometimes because it's too many things inside you that it has to come out. That's what I wanted to say about yesterday. My question to you is, and this is the reason that I'm asking you, is because I heard Rick Sanchez, who used to work for CNN, and Rick Sanchez was giving some information that there is no one Latino man or woman, Spanish speaking, in the national TV, I'm not talking about local news, that have ever, except him, have held a position, a newscaster. And I have been going around and around thinking where I have seen it. And he actually gave that a statistic. And he is right. Besides him, I don't remember. And I'm talking about national. I'm not talking about a local news. I'm talking about national. If you go back, They have been Asian women. They have all the time white men and black men. But I don't remember except for him who used to hold that position on CNN. And you know what happened to him. So my question to you is about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Do you think it's racism? This is a Latina woman, and people, I even had to stop somebody from my own group telling the gentleman, you consider yourself American because you are Italian-American. Now you're telling me you're the first-generation American. And you refer to her as the Puerto Rican with parents that were born in Puerto Rico. Her father was born here, and I believe he's the second-generation Puerto Rican. And right there, I'm thinking about what you're saying about her, how this Nancy Pelosi wanted to crush her. And that, to me, it's more about racism. Looking at this little Latina like me with this big mouth talking to this white woman who's the percentage of them, they go to the booth, they go to the voting booth. And who do they vote for? Always white men. So my question to you, what do you think? Because I just see it as a racism more than anything. A very powerful, with a girl, very smart, who speaks out. And that's my question to you. Sorry.
Well, you know, this is, it's got many parts to it. But number one is that people really have to understand what she accomplished. And that made her, in the eyes of the political establishment, that made her a force to be reckoned with. And they never expected it. They never expected somebody to be so single-minded, to be so close to the community, to have the support of the community, to have a brain, to have a vision. And when, you know, let me just give you an illustration. I once was in an interview with some people planning, this is many years ago, planning a women's magazine in Manhattan. And, you know, sitting down and just talking. And the woman I was talking to, who was the head of this project, she just shot out of her seat and says, I'll be right back. And she comes back with four people, and we're in this little corner. And so she started the conversation again. It mostly was trading ideas. And out of nowhere, she says, what did I tell you? Isn't she terrifying? That's exactly the reaction that I think people had about Ocasio-Cortez. What is so terrifying? What is terrifying is that she blew all stereotypes. She, again, is an extraordinary leader who should not be feared, but should be embraced. This is somebody who should be cultivated as the new generation of leadership, because she has proven her point herself. And she has proven the point of people who have been talking about the changes needed in politics. But people are really terrified. That's a good word. People are terrified of people like that. That's why you don't see many Latinos in media. Why? Because they control, in the eyes of people who are terrified, they control, or they have the capacity to control people's actions and people's thoughts, to influence them, not control them, but to influence them. And they're very, very uncomfortable with that. So she will, this is nothing new, I'm sure, for her. I am positive that her whole life, this has been a cross she has had to bear. because other people's insecurities get transferred onto her, and she's made responsible for their inadequacies, their insecurities, their lack of accomplishment. We can't help that. But what we can do is to surround her with support and to defend her so that she doesn't get the feeling that she's out there by herself, that she's on a lone journey. No, she should get the feeling, which is what she got when she was elected, the community surrounded her. And this is, to me, this was one of the most hopeful signs that we have in terms of new political leadership. Nancy Pelosi is terrified of this young woman. You don't have to ask. You just know. And the fact that they decided to sideline, and these were very, very strong proposals that they had put together, this group of progressives. The first item on her agenda is to kill them off. The community should take note and never let this young lady feel alone in her struggle, because in the end, her struggle is for people, for the people. That's how I feel. This is a rare, she's a rare breed. She's a rare kind of person to come along, and she is going to suffer terribly. She's going to suffer terribly. And we should take the edge off of that by defending her at all costs. We must defend her. Thanks so much for your call today. Great to hear from you, Ali. And that brings us, we almost are at the end of the program today. Of course, tomorrow is Free Your Mind Friday. There are so many people who have yet to get their word in edgewise. We could do that tomorrow, absolutely. But we are going through a very important time, and we have to make sense of the reality that we are experiencing, because these things are not happening by chance. They're happening so that if we pay attention, we get closer to the idea of what it is we need to do to survive. Because believe it or not, our survival is not at the top of their list. Their survival is at the top of their list. They are not necessarily connected to the same reality that we are connected to. So we have to constantly, you know, recalibrate the situation to see where we are at any given time, where we can locate ourselves on the axis of power, and with regard to our own survival. This is where we have been placed. We've been forced into this position. And so we can't let our guard down, but we also have to invest in understanding what it is we're looking at. What is it that we're experiencing? Why are they doing the things that they're doing? And what are the likely consequences of their actions on us? Thanks so much for joining me today. Again, let's hook up again tomorrow and finish off the week with Free Your Mind Friday. And I do enjoy this session, these sessions that we are having, because everybody learns and everybody has something to contribute that would cause us to think or rethink our reality. Thanks again. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye. ¶¶